Welcome to Hebraic Insights in the Gospels. Join us every Sabbath on Zion Road Radio for a look at the life, deeds, and words of Yeshua Messiah and his followers from the Torah-centric Hebraic perspective they were originally lived and written in. Today's program is on John chapter 9. Please get out your Bible and follow along. What can John chapter 9 teach us about what happens when spiritual blindness meets spiritual vision? Since we know that Messiah was able to just simply heal the man, why did he put mud on the blind man's eyes and send him to the pool of Siloam? What did it mean? Why do we need to be careful to make a distinction between worshiping God and worshiping our religion? Is it possible that we could be blinded to the work that Yahweh is doing because of our religious beliefs? What or who can heal our own spiritual blindness? How does Messiah's very existence separate the wicked from the righteous, and the blind from those who see? And what is the point of John chapter 9? Stay tuned throughout today's program for Eliyahu ben David's insight on these questions and more in John chapter 9. And now, here's Eliyahu.
We're following the movements of Yeshua Messiah during the last 6 months of his time with us here on the earth. And if you had 6 months left and you knew it, or less, what would you be doing with your time, with your life? As we go through following Yeshua and listening to him, it's quite amazing to see the things he said, the things he did as he was seeing his time moving towards the end very swiftly. So that's kind of the context that we're going into as we look at John 9. This is sort of the background of what's happening with Yeshua. And we're going to look at the subject of light and dark. Nothing could be further from one another, right? It's really pretty amazing because it seems like the dark void is so great that it would swallow up all of the light, but it doesn't, and it can't, because as the book of John says in the first chapter, the light still shines in the darkness. And it is the people of Yahweh, the followers of Yeshua Messiah, who shine forth his light in a very dark world, a world that's getting darker by the minute. So the message here in John 9, it really can resound with us because we face a lot of the same issues that are raised here in John chapter 9. John 9:1 begins, as he passed by, he saw a man blind from birth. He saw this man blind from birth. Everybody had walked by this man for decades, because what can you really do for a man blind from birth? But Yeshua could do something. And so he took notice of the man. And as we look at the story, we find it talks about two kinds of blindness. It talks about physical blindness at the same time that it's revealing spiritual blindness to us, and of course, the opposites of both. Let's look at this a little closer. His disciples asked him a question, and I think it goes right to the heart of something that's a very common misconception. They said, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" You know, lots and lots of people blame those who have problems. If somebody's blind, they must be blind because they did something to make that happen. If somebody is disabled in some way, it must be their fault. They must have done something wrong. And this is very common, and unfortunately, I encounter believers sometimes that feel the same way like this, that if somebody has had something bad happen to them, it must mean that they have done something to deserve that. And not surprisingly, some major religions of the world have incorporated this into their religious thinking. I think we've all heard the term karma. Sometimes it's even used in the popular culture. We hear about karma. And actually, this is a concept of Hinduism and Buddhism. And it basically means that the sum of your actions come back to bite you. If you do bad things, then bad things are going to happen to you. And that means then if bad things have happened to somebody, well, that's justice. That's the universe getting justice on the person because they did something bad. And that's why in countries that are dominated by Hinduism and Buddhism, for example, there's really very little compassion for people who are disabled, for people who have bad circumstances. They're really unwanted people, and there's not compassion for them because, after all, it's karma. It's their own fault, in other words. And this idea expressed here that they must have sinned or their parents sinned, it's the same idea, isn't it? That it's happened to the person because they deserve it. The benefit of having this attitude is then when you encounter people who have infirmities, you don't have to help them because it's their own fault. You might not know why, but it's their own fault. But is this really true? Well, Yeshua answered them, "Neither did this man sin nor his parents, but that the works of Elohim might be revealed in him." Now, Yeshua was answering their question. He wasn't saying that this man was sinless or his parents were sinless. He's simply saying that no specific sin was committed that resulted in this man being born blind. And we know from the whole tenor of the scriptures that sin came into the world by our first parents. And once sin came into the world, it introduced death, it introduced imperfection in the human race. So good people can get cancer in this world. It's not because he sinned that he got cancer. Cancer is in the world. This man was born blind. We don't know why. Maybe he had some genetic defect due to the fact that imperfection has contaminated the human genetics. Well, back then they didn't know about genetics. We know this now, that this can happen. So this can happen to anyone. Perfectly good people who certainly are no worse than any of us can nevertheless be stricken with something like congenital blindness or other things. This is the result of original sin that brought death and suffering into the world. Well, Yahweh did not immediately stamp that out, did he? Because there were bigger issues. So he let that go on. He let the world go on. He has a specific point in time when he's going to deal with it. And ultimately, all of those effects in people's lives, those effects of sin, will accrue to the glory of Yahweh. Think about yourself. Think about your imperfections, the things that you have been forgiven for. Think about how the love of Yeshua has manifested him even through the imperfections in your life. And you can really understand what Yeshua was saying here. Sometimes it's in our imperfections that Elohim is manifested to others. When you see someone who's able to handle those problems in their life by the power of Yeshua, it's a humbling experience that truly can draw us closer to him. And we know if we have lived in this world for any period of time that troubles can actually be an opportunity for faith. And in this case, as we get to the end of chapter 9, we find that's exactly what happened for this blind man. His blindness led to the greatest possible blessing. Following up on this, Yeshua said, "I must work the works of him who sent me while it is day. The night is coming when no one can work. While I am in the world, I am the light of the world." We're going to come back to these verses and continue through with the story. After he said this, he spat on the ground, made mud with the saliva, and he anointed the blind man's eyes with the mud and said to him, "Go wash in the pool of Siloam," which means sent. So he went away, washed, and came back seeing. Now, some people find this very curious that Yeshua actually spit on the ground and made mud with the dirt and put that on the man's eyes and sent him away to bathe in order for him to be healed. Was there some special property to the saliva? Was there some special property to the mud? Was it the water of the pool of Siloam that healed the man? Is that what was going on? Or was something else happening? Well, as we think about this, can you think of any other bizarre behaviors of prophets in the Bible? And we do have some examples that I bet you can think of. For instance, the prophet Hosea. He was told to go and marry a prostitute. That's pretty bizarre, isn't it? Why? Because he was acting out the marriage of Yahweh with his unfaithful nation. And through what he was actually acting out in his own life, he was illustrating something. He was illustrating something bigger. This happens with prophets a lot. Remember Ezekiel? He was told to bake bread on manure and eat it. Not a pleasant thing to do. And why? To illustrate what was going to happen to those people if they didn't change their ways. He had a number of things, Ezekiel did, that were kind of strange. He had to lay in public naked for a long period of time, again, acting out what was going to happen to them when they were taken into captivity. This is a very common thing that we see with prophets, where they did things that were actually acting out a bigger message. And I believe that's what Yeshua was doing here in the way that he was healing this man. He was acting out something for this man in order to make a spiritual point, not only to him, but to us. As we began the book of John, it began different than the other Gospels because it did not begin with the birth of Yeshua on the earth. It began talking about who he was before he ever came here. The Word, the Son of God, the Creator of the universe. I believe what Yeshua did here is in keeping with that theme. At the creation, in the creation story, you have two major agents of creation that are used there, essentially brought together in order to create. And those two things are water and earth. And Yahweh brought those two things together in such a way as to create the world and everything in it. Yeshua, by spitting on the ground and mixing that with the dust of the earth and smearing that on the man's eyes and giving him back his sight, was saying, I'm the creator and I'm the one who made eyes and I can give you your sight. If you believe me, go to the pool of Siloam and wash this off and you'll be fine. And the man did it, showing his faith. And of course, the pool of Siloam has meaning because it's even included in the text that it has meaning. It means sent. It means Yeshua was sent of the Father. That's why the man was sent to the pool of Siloam. And that all of this is true was proven when the man washed and came back seeing. Well, how did that work? I don't know. Do you? How did God create the world? We don't know how he did that because we're not God, right? We just know he did it because we're standing on the ground that he made. We're breathing the air that he created. We're thinking with the brain that he gave us. We have plenty of evidence that he did it, even though we don't know how he did it. Well, the man comes back who had never been able to see. I hate to say this, but can you imagine what a burden he was to his neighborhood? I bet you he was always in the way, because he couldn't even see where he was, right? I bet they were tripping over this guy all the time. Plus, it tells us later in the story, he was out there begging. That's very annoying, isn't it? Having somebody begging in the street. And he happens to be your neighbor, so you're having to deal with it all the time. Did these guys know that this man had been blind? Without a doubt, they knew. And yet, they're saying things like, isn't this he who sat and begged? It's like they couldn't believe it. How could this be that same man? And here he is, he sees. Another person says, well, he just looks like him. No, it can't really be him because that can't happen. It has to be a guy that looks exactly like him. Isn't this amazing? The truth can be staring you right in the face. But if it's something that's not normal, if it's something that doesn't usually happen, Your brain can get to work making up an explanation that is not the truth. It can happen to us too. It can happen to us too, not just the people out there. It can happen to us too. So they were asking, how were your eyes opened? So you can just see these people all talking about this, right? Trying to deal with this thing that had happened, that's an impossible thing to happen. And so when finally they asked him what happened, he just said what happened. Well, this man called Yeshua, he came along and he made some mud and he put it on my eyes and he said, go to the pool of Siloam and wash. I did that and now I can see. I'm sure there was somebody that said, you need to be able to bottle that. You'd make $1 million. They asked him, where is he? And he said, I don't know. They wanted to know, who was this that could do that? Where can we find him? I have a problem, you know, I have a little twist in my arm here. Maybe he could help me. You know, they're thinking different reasons why they would want to see him. Maybe some of them were thinking, well, maybe, you know, he's a magician or something. We need to track this down. We need to get at the bottom of this thing as to how this could happen. So they couldn't figure it out, so they brought him to the authorities. Why did they need to bring him to the authorities? Did he do anything wrong? I don't think it's against the law to see, is it? It was for him, apparently. So they brought this man who had been born blind to the Pharisees, who were the religious authorities and who even had shades of secular authority too thrown into that. And it just happened to be the Sabbath when Yeshua made the mud and opened the man's eyes. And of course, that made it all the more unacceptable, didn't it, that he did this. So the Pharisees asked him how he received his sight. So he made up this incredible story and he said, he put mud in my eyes, I washed and I see. Only he didn't make it up. It's what happened. Is there anything about he put mud in my eyes, I washed and I see that you don't understand? So they're asking, and he just tells them the truth. Should that not be the end of it? If it even had gone that far? Well, this just caused people to start arguing. It reminds me of Congress. Some of the Pharisees said, this man is not from Elohim because he doesn't keep the Sabbath. Doesn't keep the Sabbath should be interpreted as meaning he doesn't keep our rules about the Sabbath. See, let me tell you something about people who are highly religious people like these Pharisees. They don't know the difference between their own religious rules and what God actually said in his word. That's all blurred to them. In fact, they don't know the difference between their religion and God. So that's what's really behind this. When this Pharisee says, this man is not from Elohim because he doesn't keep the Sabbath. We here keep the biblical Sabbath that Yahweh set, which is set according to Yahweh's clock, which is in the sky, and is determined by the moon, which determines the months. That's what we keep. Not only that, not only does the scriptures, do the scriptures themselves indicate that, but when you look in the scholarly works of the Jews, going back hundreds and even thousands of years, they confirm that this is how the Sabbath has been kept. This is how it began. This is how it was first kept. This is how it was instituted by Moses. All the facts are there. It's really undisputable if you look at the facts. Religious people, including some messianic people, are so sold on a Saturday Sabbath that they will not even consider these facts. And many of them will tell you, well, because you're not keeping the Sabbath on the day they think is the Sabbath, well, you're not a Sabbath keeper at all. So how different are these modern people from these Pharisees? Isn't it the same spirit that you see there? And this is a very big thing because the Sabbath is the sign of Israel. Other Pharisees said, how can a man who is a sinner do such signs? There was division among them. So I believe from what it goes on to say later, this has to be interpreted as they're saying, well, this couldn't really have happened because this man is a sinner. So we don't understand this, but it didn't really happen, even though the man is right there who is the testimony of it. So then some of them said to the blind man, or formerly blind man, what do you say about him because he opened your eyes? And the man who had received the healing said, he is a prophet. Well, duh! Who else in the whole experience of the Jewish nation healed people? Was it not the prophets that did that? Elisha did that. Elijah did that. Remember Moses and his hand trick? He did that. It's a logical conclusion that the man came to. Well, he must be a prophet because it's prophets that do this kind of stuff. Why did they not come to the same conclusion? The Judeans, therefore, did not believe concerning him that he had been blind and had received his sight until they called the parents of him who had received his sight and asked them, is this your son whom you say was born blind? How then does he now see? So this is pretty amazing to me because they'd already talked to all the neighbors and all the neighbors say, this is the man that was born blind. The man himself said it and said what had happened. But these Pharisees were so set against this actually happening that they called in the parents and grilled them about this man. So here's the parents, and they say, we know that this is our son. Yeah, he's our son. And he was born blind. The mother was there, she knew. But how he now sees, we don't know. They really didn't know, did they? Or who opened his eyes, we don't know. Again, there's nothing about them being there when it happened. He is of age, ask him. He'll speak for himself. The parents didn't want to get into this can of worms. Goes on, his parents said these things because they feared the Judeans, For the Judeans had already agreed that if any man would confess him as Messiah, he would be put out of the synagogue. Therefore, his parents said, he is of age, ask him. So even though the parents weren't there, who else was there in Jerusalem that could have done this? Who else had been healing people of all sorts of diseases? There's only one name, right? But they didn't want to say that name. They didn't want to say that name. Why? They were under coercion. They were under religious coercion. This is very common. Religious coercion is very common. You know, we think about out there in the world, this thing called political correctness. That is a form of coercion, like what I'm talking about. For instance, on your job, if you are not politically correct, in many cases, you'll end up losing your job or other kinds of associations because you're not being politically correct in going along with the party line, sometimes about things that are absolutely ridiculous. However, in the spiritual community, we also do this. I pray we don't do this here at Zion. I pray that we never will do this. But I've seen it happen in groups of people who claim to be believers, where even if something is true, you can't say it if it goes against the party line in that group. And let me tell you how this actually works. If something happens in real life that is irrefutably true, like what happened with this blind man, and it is contrary to theology, then there's something wrong with the theology. And people need to take a look at that and see where they're wrong. That's what should happen here at Zion if something like that happened. If some actual facts occurred that are contrary to something we believe, and we're confronted with those things, we need to see where the error is, where the problem is, and fix it. Right? That doesn't make a group like wrong about everything. It doesn't mean they're not in harmony with God, but if they have a heart for truth, they're not going to throw somebody out because they're speaking the truth. They're going to deal with it. And everybody will be better for it. And you know, we have things like this in Scripture where the people of Yahweh actually did this. We have the story of Ezra, and he was a priest, and Yahweh sent him to the former exiles who had gone into the land to rebuild in the land. And they had started marrying, intermarrying with the people of the land. They even had children with the people of the land. And when Ezra got there, he said, hey, wait a minute, the Torah says you're not permitted to marry women who are pagans, period. It's against the Torah. Send those women and their children out of your house. Crying, they all did it. They came to grips with the truth. Why did they have to do that? The reason they had been sent into exile in the first place is because they had intermarried with the people of the land. They had adopted their paganism. And now they were going to start the same thing all over again? No. No. even though it was hard, they had to back off from that position they had taken, which was wrong. And when they did that, they were blessed in that. We don't have to be committed to things that aren't true. When we find out they aren't true, we have to come to grips with them and do the right thing. That's what these Pharisees should have done, right? They should have come to grips with the truth and dealt with it. But they didn't want to do that because it threatened them. It made them look bad. And so they tried to control all of this through coercion, through telling people, oh, you can't say that. There's certain things you cannot say. You can't say that this man could be the Messiah, even though he's healing people and raising people from the dead. That is bondage to lies. That's darkness. We don't ever want to go there. That's not who we ever want to be. It does create fear. These parents were fearful. And they were fearful of getting thrown out of the synagogue. And you have to realize it's not like somebody being thrown out of a church today, because in any community in first century Judea, the synagogue was more like the community center. It wasn't just where you came to meet to worship. It was where the whole community came together. So if you're thrown out of the synagogue, that means you're ostracized by virtually everybody where you live. It will affect your life in every possible way you can imagine. And so it was a lot of power. And these parents, understandably, were afraid. So they were very careful. So now the Pharisees called the man who was blind a second time and said to him, "Give glory to Elohim. We know that this man is a sinner." They're trying to intimidate him. They're trying to say, essentially, we know this man is a sinner. In other words, you're lying. This isn't true. You need to admit this isn't true. You need to confess that this is all a lie. You need to deny the facts of this case because we just can't endure them. That's what they're doing. And can you understand why they would do that? Some truth just cannot be endured, is the reason. Why do some of the people out there say that people like us who observe the Sabbath at its right time, according to the moon, are lunatics? Why do they say that? Well, it's a lot easier to say that than to prove from the scriptures that they're right. That's the reason they say that. They want to intimidate people into thinking, well, if I was to accept that, they'd be calling me crazy. They're using coercion and intimidation, and that's wrong. If they disagree, they should say that they disagree, and they should prove their point. We would be very open to having a friendly discussion with any believers who disagree with our position about this, and listen to what they say and deal with whatever facts they have. But that's not what they ever do. It's always this, they're lunatics thing. It's the same thing. It's coercion, coercing their people into staying away from those crazy people who believe in that lunar Sabbath thing. And in the process, their people are missing something that is so precious and wonderful, something that could really help to bring them closer to God. But it's a threat to those people who had invested themselves in something that's incorrect. Well, how did this man deal with this? He says, "I don't know if he is a sinner. One thing I do know, that though I was blind, now I see." That's the irrefutable fact of this man. He's standing right in front of them. He's looking at them, and he could never do that all his life. It's just true. They said to him again, "What did he do to you? How did he open your eyes?" See, they're trying to get this guy to say something that they can latch on to be able to attack what Messiah did. There's got to be something about this where we can go after this guy. But there wasn't anything. So he said, "I told you already and you didn't listen. Why do you want to hear it again? You don't also want to become his disciples, do you?" Well, the man is getting exasperated, isn't he? And kind of sarcastic, but I think he's justified. So they insulted him and said, "You are his disciple, but we're disciples of Moses. We know that Elohim has spoken to Moses, but as for this man, we don't know where he comes from." They thought of themselves as disciples of Moses. That's what their religion said they were. But they actually were disciples of religious dogma that denied the truth. Moses never did that. Moses didn't deny the truth. So their claim proved to be wrong. They were in the dark. That's where they were. The man answered them, "How amazing. You don't know where he comes from, yet he opened my eyes. We know that Elohim doesn't listen to sinners, but if anyone is a worshiper of Elohim and does his will, he listens to him." Do you know what this man is doing? He's parroting back to them what he heard from them at many a Sabbath meeting. This is what they said to the people. God's not going to listen to you if you're a sinner, right? So you have to do the things we tell you. And if anyone worships Elohim and does his will, then God's going to listen to that person. This is what this man is saying back to these Pharisees. They knew this. They understood this already. This is like kindergarten. He goes on, "Since the world began, it has never been heard that anyone opened the eyes of someone born blind. If this man were not from Elohim, he could do nothing." How do you argue with that? Is that not just manifestly true? It's just true. So here this man who had been a beggar is correcting these Pharisees. And, of course, they didn't like it. And he makes certain claims here that it's never been heard that anyone opened the eyes of someone born blind. Well, when I read that, I was thinking, you know, skeptical kind of people would read that today. And they would say, well, of course, that was back then. But today, with modern medical science and so on, surely today, medical science is able to restore the sight to someone born blind. That's what some people would think. Here's a program that's trying to do that right here in Texas. Here's excerpts that I read about this. Baylor College of Medicine is working on this with other parties. Scientists have partially restored sight to blind people using a paradigm-shifting implant that wires images directly to the brain. Subjects are not seeing forms or clear edges. They see a small number of points of light corresponding to where that object is located. You decide whether that's seeing. The implant consists of 60 electrodes that can deliver patterns of stimulation to the visual part of the brain in patients who were not born blind. The brain can still use this raw information to piece together the environment around them. So, except for people who were born blind, they can do this with people so they can see a spot of light in order to indicate that there's an object there. But they still can't even do this with somebody who's born blind. This is the state-of-the-art medical science. Still is not able to do what Yeshua did with some spit and some mud. I think that's pretty impressive. Well, getting back to the narrative, after this man basically laid it out for these Pharisees, they answered him, "You were altogether born in sins, and do you teach us?" And they threw him out. Do you know why they threw him out? Because they didn't have an answer. That's why they threw him out. He was right. And of course, that's the cardinal sin. You can't be right with these people. Yeshua heard that they had thrown him out, and finding him, he said, "Do you believe in the Son of Elohim?" See, it's getting right back to what this is really all about. The Son of Elohim, the Creator, asking the formerly blind man, "Do you believe in the Son of Elohim?" You know, there was a teaching about the Son of Elohim. You can find it, for example, in the Book of Enoch. It tells us he was involved in the creation. In Genesis 1, Elohim says, "Let us make man in our image." It's in there. And Yeshua is asking, "Do you believe in that? Do you believe in the Son of Elohim?" And he answered, "Who is he, Lord, that I may believe in him?" And Yeshua said to him, "You have both seen him, and it is he who speaks with you." And he said, "Lord, I believe." And he worshiped him. Why did he worship him? Not because of what he did, but because of who he was. The Creator. He worshiped him. What a wonderful way for this story to end with this man. Because not only was it his sight that was restored, but Yeshua himself actually led this man to salvation, to knowing him, to confessing him. I think that's just such an amazing story. And you know, this is what I've seen about Yeshua. He knows people, and he does what it takes for the righteous to be saved. For this man, he needed to be born blind, apparently, and he needed to be set free from his blindness so that he could be saved. If that's true, was it worth it? I think it's an amazing story. Well, getting back to this comment of Yeshua, "I came into this world for judgment, that those who don't see may see, and that those who see may become blind." I think this is the whole point of John chapter 9. Yeshua is the light of the world. And the fact that he has come into the world has two effects regarding judgment. It causes honest-hearted people to see the truth. You see, that's one side of judgment. Usually we think of judgment as a negative thing, but it's not always a negative thing. If you think of judgment as it's meant in the scriptures, a righteous judgment is not a negative thing. It's judging what the truth is. It brings out the truth. And the light of Yeshua in the world does that. It brings out the truth, and it shines light on the truth, so that therefore honest-hearted, truth-seeking people see what the truth is. And they respond to it, and they respond to him. And that's a judgment in their favor. On the other hand, you take the black-hearted, selfish people of this world, like these Pharisees, who would not believe no matter what happened. The effect of the light of Yeshua in the world is simply to cause them to deny the truth. And they show up who they are, and they show up who their father is, the father of the lie. It's not that Yeshua is even trying to judge people. It's the very existence of the truth itself that causes people to take a position one way or the other about the truth. I think this is very instructive to us, to the remnant in these final days, because the scriptures show us that this is also going to be the effect of the remnant in the world, to show forth the light of Messiah, to show forth the truth of Messiah, to cause the world to have to take a position about the truth. And some will be like the blind man, and they'll respond in a righteous way and see the light. But the wicked, they're going to be like these Pharisees. So they're going to deny the truth. They're going to fight against the truth. And they're going to come to the end that comes to those who do those things. Here at the end, it says, those of the Pharisees who were with him heard these things and said to him, are we also blind? Yeshua said to them, if you were blind, you'd have no sin, but now you say, we see. Therefore, your sin remains. If people are so proud that they will not admit that they have blindness, how can they ever see? How can they ever see the truth? If they remain in that condition, they cannot be saved because they themselves are not allowing themselves to be saved. That's what he's telling them. John 9, 4 and 5, I must work the works of him who sent me while it is day. The night is coming when no one can work. While I am in the world, I am the light of the world. Well, one way of seeing this is that Yeshua, his time on the earth was closing out. It was still day for him to do the works of the Father, but the day was coming to an end because he was only going to be in the earth a few more months. So he's saying, I need to do the works of the Father while it's still day here. And the night is coming when no one can work. In other words, this is true of all of us, isn't it? We have a certain amount of time that we're given to do his work in our lives. And then one day, everything goes dark. That's what he's talking about. However, he's not just talking about himself here. As Vincent's word studies say, the best texts read us instead of me. Literally, it is necessary for us to work. The disciples are thus associated by Jesus with himself, it says. And that's really true. He's not just talking about himself because he also says here, the night is coming when no one can work. So he's obviously not just talking about himself. He's talking about all of his followers too. And isn't that part of the reason why we have chosen to devote our lives to serving him, especially in these last days, because don't we know the night is coming? When the night comes, we see the light recede and the darkness increase. Isn't that what you see when you look out in the world? Aren't you seeing the light recede and the darkness increase? It means the night is coming. We need to do our work while we can do it. Because the darkness is going to come in. It is coming in. That eventually will even stop us from being able to do the work that we can do now. 1 Corinthians 15 talks about this. It says, thanks be to Elohim who gives us the victory through our Lord Yeshua the Messiah. Therefore, my beloved brothers, be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in Adonai's work, because you know that your labor is not in vain in Adonai. We must be like him. We must work while it's daytime. In other words, while we have the opportunity. He did the work of the Father while his light was shining in the world, and we must do the same. He says the night is coming when no one can work. The scriptures talk about this. We happen to be living in the generation that will see this finally happen. A night so dark, so dense, that no one can do the real work anymore. Paul wrote, concerning the times and seasons, brothers, you have no need that anything be written to you. For you yourselves know well that the day of Adonai comes like a thief in the night. For when they are saying peace and safety, then sudden destruction will come on them, like birth pains on a pregnant woman, and they will in no way escape. But you, brothers, aren't in darkness, that the day should overtake you like a thief. You are all children of light and children of the day. We know what's going on because we're in the light. We can see the darkness coming, but we don't belong to the darkness. So it says, let's not sleep as the rest do. They're all sleeping. They don't see the truth. They're in the darkness. But let's watch and be sober. And I would add, let's do the works of the light. Light and dark. Two things existing together in the same world. And let us uphold the light of Yeshua.
You have been listening to Hebraic Insights in the Gospels. Some of the scripture verses referenced in today's program are John chapter 9, John chapter 1 verse 1, John chapter 1 verse 5, Hosea chapter 3, Ezekiel chapter 4, 2 Kings chapter 4, 1 Kings chapter 17, Ezra chapter 9 and 10, 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 57 through verse 58, and 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 1 through verse 6. Further teachings and study materials on Walking in the Holy Spirit, the original calendar of the Bible we call Holy Time, Ministry Service, the Good News, the role of the remnant of Israel in the Good News, Sharing the Good News, the organization of the assembly of believers in their day, apostles, prophets, evangelists, pastors, teachers, and other kinds of ministers, and their function in the body of Messiah, along with many other related topics, can be found at our membership site, Zion Tabernacle. Sign up is free. Just go to zion.net. That's TSIYON.NET. New programs on the Gospels will be airing every Sabbath on Zion Road Radio. Tune in next Shabbat to learn more from Hebraic Insights in the Gospels. Shabbat Shalom! Stand at the cross.
crossroads and look, ask for the ancient paths.
Grace, as we come face to face with death again, we'll gladly give our lives to know we did the best to bury sin.
You've heard that the book of Revelation foretells apocalyptic events at the end of the world. You've heard about the Antichrist and the Mark of the Beast. You may have even heard Eliyahu ben David's programs on Revelation or read his book entitled Announcing Judgment Day. But do you know what the book of Daniel foretells about the last days? Are you aware of the current events that are reshaping the world closer and closer to the one world government described in biblical prophecy? Eliyahu's Daniel Seminar includes new revelation from Daniel that has been sealed for nearly 2.5 millennia. Join us as a free member on our community site, Zion Tabernacle, for access to our free 8-part video seminar entitled Beasts of Daniel Surfacing. To see what other free resources you'll get as a Zion Tabernacle member, go to zion.org and click Join Us in the menu bar. That's TSIYON.ORG. Then click Join Us.